This is Columbia Morning at Newstalk 1400 KFRU. We're very grateful when the chancellor of the campus of the University of Missouri in Columbia is able to join us, and he has agreed to do so today. Alexander Cartwright is here. It's good to see you again, sir. How are you?
Good to see you again, David. It's great to be here.
I got to get the right microphone on first there. There you go. Here we go.
Okay. Good morning, David. It's really great to be here. Things are going pretty well, and we're pretty excited about where we're headed.
I wanted to start, I told you, just as we were getting ready to go, I wanted to start with some good news today. I need good news today. This came a couple of weeks ago, actually 2 weeks today, dated February 2nd. Mizzou applications are roaring back. What are you seeing with the applications?
Yeah. So right now we're up about 17% in our applications, and that's across the board. We're up about 12% in transfer students to the university. And I think it really is just indicative of the fact that people are seeing the value of this great institution and want to be part of it.
I don't want to diminish that good news, but I did see something on a larger level. I think it was the Washington Post several weeks ago. They were talking about the increase in applications in many state large institutions. It was happening, I think, in Maryland was one of the examples they used because that's close to Washington, but others places where this is happening at many places. Is there an explanation for this nationally?
So, you know, there are... there's a lot more, what I would say, shopping of opportunities that people are going after right now. I think for us, it's really looking at the change from the past year and where it's happening and understanding more about what this means about us as an institution.
So you interpret that as harder work by those who are out recruiting to get a more positive message out? How do you interpret what's happening specifically for MU?
I think for us, it's about making sure we're getting our message out there and that people are understanding what Mizzou is about and what we really want to do for our students and our commitment to the students. And I hope that people are really seeing how committed we are to student success.
When you go around the state, are you still making visits around the state quite a bit?
Yeah, we're trying to.
So what are you hearing now that somebody might say, you know, I know this is prior to your being here, Chancellor, but this is how we feel now.
Well, you know, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback in the last few months from people. I think they understand that we're trying to look at our institution critically and trying to understand how we make sure that we're positioning it so that we could be delivering the type of education that our students deserve.
When you think of other things, I know one of the things that's important for a university like MU is research funding. What are the trends there?
So right now, our trends are also looking good. We're up, I think, as of year-to-date, we're up maybe 10 to 20% in some areas, and we anticipate that we'll go up a little bit over this year. I'm going to have a talk on February 27th about research, creative activities, and economic development, where I'll outline a number of plans that we have for how we're really going to grow research and economic development, not just for Mizzou, but for the region.
You're going to tell me I'm 11 days early on this then, huh?
Well, you know, some of the things are pretty obvious. I do think that we need to grow our research significantly. We are committed to bringing in the faculty that will allow us to do that. I think there's tremendous benefit to students who come to Mizzou to be in an environment where they're interacting with the leaders in their field. And I think that having those people committed to providing a quality education at the same time that they're providing life-changing solutions, I think these are the things that we want to do as an institution.
It is a challenge, though. I mean, how much do you think of this as a competition? Because if I were listening to you, let's say we're sitting in Ames, Iowa, or let's say that we're sitting in Tucson, Arizona, or maybe I'm in L.A., or maybe we're in Boulder, Colorado, and you were the chancellor, I'm some talk show host that have you in here, you would have said the same thing to if any research institution.
Yeah, it's very much is a competition. If you look at it, in fact, you have to start thinking of it as a competition. What I often talk about is market share. So we have to be looking at how many faculty do we have, how many researchers, how much are they publishing, what are the opportunities, where are the funding agencies, are we oversubscribed or undersubscribed to that agency, and can we think strategically about where we go for funding. We have to really start thinking of it that way. And that's a change, and that's a change that then gives you an advantage when you're going out and trying to raise research expenditures.
You do attract, it's just like an athletic program wants to attract the best coach for a program. You try to attract those who would be professors or researchers.
Absolutely. So what we try to do, of course, is we're an AAU institution. We're interested in attracting the faculty, the researchers that are the best in the world. And we look at that, it's important because it also contributes to the economy of Missouri. It makes a big difference for this economy. We have spinoffs. We have we provide the workforce for people who come in, the trained, skilled people that companies are looking for. These are all the things that we do as an institution that drives economic impact.
An engineering researcher wouldn't be much different than a basketball or football coach. They respond to money oftentimes, right? And to facilities.
Yes.
So if I were going to hire a basketball coach or a football coach, oftentimes donors step in and say, we're going to hire this person. The university will say it $250,000 or $300,000 when their actual salary may be $2 million. So are there similar things that happen when it comes to hiring good researchers, attractive people who might attract the funding for research and the doctoral level students who want to study with them?
So, there are a lot of things that happen similar. Of course, we're not at the $2 million salaries. But yes, there is a competition for the top researchers, and that means that you do have to think about salaries and how you can offer them a competitive salary. But oftentimes for researchers, it's beyond the salary. It's exactly the things that you said. They want to be in an environment where they feel they can be successful. So it's about the facilities. So how do we build the facilities that allow them to be able to do what they want to do? I think all of those are the things that we try to invest in. Our donors have been incredibly supportive. They will sometimes sponsor what we call the endowed professorships, which allow us to give support to the faculty to do the things they want to do. And we have to be thinking about creatively on how we provide that infrastructure that's needed to remain nationally competitive. It's one of the reasons that we've identified the Translational and Precision Medicine Complex as one of our real goals for the institution.
That is a name that really overwhelms me when I hear that talk.
Most people are overwhelmed by it.
So what would that be specifically?
I mean, the easiest way to think about it is precision medicine. It's thinking about how do I tailor medical treatments to the individual, thinking about the proteomics, the genomics of me as an individual. And my body will respond differently to treatments than your body. And we want to be able to get very specific and personalize the medical treatment for every individual.
That would be, if I think I know where you're thinking about building this, it would be as college tees with a stadium.
It's in that area. I think it's the next one up. There's a lot in that area.
Sort of near where the Hampton Inn is across
near
the street. Near the hospitals, in that vicinity there. Now, my question is, under the best scenario, when would that be open for business?
Well, we'd like for it to be open sooner rather than later, but it's probably, it's a few years out, 3 to 4 years out.
Do people give specifically saying we'd like to, when people chip in for a $100 million addition to the south end of a football field, it seems like it would make greater sense and be a better beneficiary to have $100 million to build this thing.
Yeah, I think the benefits to society are going to be tremendous, and I'm hoping that we can get our donors supporting it. I know there's a lot of interest already. People are looking at it, understanding what it could do for, of course, for healthcare, for everybody, but also more globally what it could do in this area. You should realize, too, that just like anything, even though it might be a few years out for the facility, we are already laying the groundwork for what we want to do in this area. We're already thinking about how do we bring together the scientists, the engineers, the medical practitioners, and to be thinking about how do you solve global challenges of healthcare.
What is comparable to this that already exists elsewhere?
There are interdisciplinary programs at different institutions. We have a unique set of skills here that I think will position us differently than most institutions. We have agriculture, we have the vet medicine, we have medicine, we have engineering, we have the arts, the sciences. We have all of these unique, including a nuclear reactor, which is also a key part to what we're doing. All of those things come together to put us in an advantageous place in the space, because there are competitors. There are people out there mm-hmm. who are doing some of these things. But we think we have a unique skill set, which will actually allow us to tackle some of the problems in a different way than others.
I think it sounds exciting. Yeah. I think it sounds like a terrific project to have as a part of the campus here. Chancellor, you mind? I've got a caller here. I don't know whether they're going to ask a question about this or not, but if you don't mind. Caller, do you have a question or comment for Chancellor Cartwright?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Obviously, one of the missions of our university is research, and that's a given. Mm-hmm. But I'm also hearing undergrads very, very upset with the level of instruction they're receiving in those undergrad courses from grad students, some of whom do not speak the language well, and communication is not good. Is there a concern at your level or any interventions planned for that?
Thank you for the call. I like that question because I think she's right. I think what you're talking about is very key to the AAU mission of the university and things of that nature. But I think you're going to answer yes. You are very concerned about what happens in undergraduate classes.
Yeah. So we of course, look at what happens in undergraduate classes, and we're committed to ensuring that our students have the best experience that we could enable. And that we have reviews at the end of the semester. Students look at and give us a general overview of what they think about how the courses are taught, and we are ensuring that those reviews are taken seriously, the comments are evaluated, and that annually and at the end of each semester, actually, that there are conversations about how people can improve their teaching for the betterment of our students.
I don't think this is a Columbia campus specific.
No,
I think that
not.
Everybody who has a large research center of 20,000 or 30,000 students and use graduate assistants as a necessity to teach in undergraduate courses are dealing with the same thing.
It's a common concern that people have that we hear across all of higher education. You know, I think, but things are changing. I think people should realize that we have to ensure that we have not just the best researchers, but also the best educators. That combination of people who understand the scholarly activities that they're undertaking at the deepest level possible, but at the same time can then translate that to where others can understand and that where it really educates and benefits our students, that's what we're looking to do. And we want to be that type of institution that people realize can make that translation.
I think it's crucial. I think for undergraduate students, they need to feel that is one of the things that is on the register for the highest level of an institution.
Absolutely. And we are committed to a quality education for all of our students.
I want to move past what we're talking about in just a moment, but let me ask one just kind of a background question in regard to research, like you were talking about, and you said identify where the funding sources come.
Yeah.
Government money is getting tighter, correct?
Yes, it is.
So how much of research funding to an institution like MU comes from government, and then how much are you going out and trying to create it through private donors?
There's a mix, and I don't remember the exact percentages, but for us, the majority of it is from federal sources. Then we have a little bit of state, but we also have industry-funded programs. And we, of course, have donor-funded research. That mix is changing over time, and I anticipate that mix will continue to change as there's more pressures to lower the amount of funding that's coming from the federal government or from the state, that what you'll start to see more is a transfer to much partnerships with industry, where industry is working with us on their research and development opportunities. I think these are the things that are going to be more in the future, and there's going to be more opportunity for us to expand in those areas.
If we hadn't have had government funding of research through the years at institutions like MU, we would have lost out on a lot of things.
We would have lost out on a lot of things. There are so many inventions that came about just from fundamental research at universities.
I want to move on to something else, and I gave you a clue that I would ask you about a column by Mitch Daniels. He wrote in the Washington Post, it was earlier this month, and the headline was, "Healthcare isn't our only ludicrously expensive industry."
Yeah.
This isn't against MU, but I like philosophical questions with people of leadership, and especially at the university. And he puts this scenario out. He says, let's design an economic sector guaranteed to cost too much. And so he explains this, and he says, all right, which is this? Which sector is this? And people say, healthcare. Healthcare, because of the way he explained it. And he said, your answer is right, but it's not complete. Mm-hmm. He said, we've done the same formula with higher education. And what he says, and just to summarize without reading the whole thing, for those who are listening and haven't read that, he says that basically we kind of need, you know, we sell higher education as a need for people to succeed in life. You're going to make a higher salary.
Yeah. Yes.
I know not everybody does, but as a general rule, with a college education, then a high school education. So we've kind of said, you need this. We've got some regulation on it. And we also kind of have paid for it through like third party pain. And what that would be is, in the past, good state support for public education. Says that basically what has happened is that only three pricing categories have outpaced healthcare over recent decades, and that would be college tuition, room and board, and books. That's, and I think anybody who's looked at the cost of that over the years, you have too. I mean, you've experienced that.
Yeah.
So he says this game has been skinless far too long. So I couldn't tell whether he was saying it's like health insurance. We need to have a better understanding of what the actual costs are. And that would mean that we would be paying more for what we're getting rather than hiding the cost behind state and federal and other places that are supporting higher ed.
Yeah. I think he's actually pointed at a few things. One is exactly that, thinking about how do you make sure people understand the true cost of education for each of our students. And I think that's something that we take very seriously. But I think he's also pointing out that we need to be thinking much more about outcomes based in what we're trying to do. Healthcare has shifted over the last few years, where much of how you're paid is based on outcomes. And for us, you'll see that in our in the recent strategic enrollment management goals that we set up. If you think about what we did there, it's a little different from what you've seen at other institutions, in that we talk about you know, what's the retention rate of our students? We want to increase the retention rate. We want to increase the graduation rate by a significant amount over the next 5 years. We want to increase the number of completions, people receiving their degrees, not the number of students entering into. We of course, think about the number of students entering, but it's more important that we have those students complete. So it is about the assessment of how well we're doing to educate and to actually then translate those into opportunities for our students so they have their degrees and they can earn those the extra salaries that people expect.
He also says better, you're right, I think that is one of the points that he makes, is a good point. Better counseling of students and their families, more attention to reducing the time it takes to earn a degree, and most straightforward of all, controlling how much is charged in the first place would all likely become more common. He says progress is not impossible at Purdue University. These actions in combination have reduced total student debt by 37% over the past 5 years.
Yeah, when we set the goals for strategic enrollment management, we knew that that had implications on what we had to do in counseling. We have to, for our advising, has to be better. We have to make sure students are aware of the financial literacy part of this too, that they need to, there's some responsibility to understand how they use the funding that they're getting to really advance and move forward as quickly as possible to get their degrees. I think there's at Mizzou, we've been very cognizant of this. I think we have I'm trying to remember the percentage of students who graduate with no debt, but it's pretty high. It's 45% or so, I think it is. We also have our debt is lower than the national average by about $7,000 or so, and that's due to our commitment to keeping the cost down for students who attend Mizzou.
How would you? I was a College of Arts and Science, so how would you rate success in accomplishing a goal, like you were saying a moment ago, which was part of Mitch Daniels' column there, saying outcomes, looking at outcomes. Is it having a job? Is it what your pay level is? But to me, I would not have reflected well on this university in my first years after graduation. Yeah. I'm not sure I reflect on well on it now, as far as salary is concerned or anything like that. But, I mean, you understand what I'm asking. There are other benefits, though, that I'd say I'm a much fuller person.
Yes. Yes.
By having the experience than I would have been if I'd never had the experience.
I agree. I think, you know, what we want to look at. So we have to, of course, start with some measurables that we can have. And what we look at is within 6 months of graduation, what percentage of our students have accomplished either, you know, getting a job or going on to graduate school or other service that they might be intending to do. That is something that we look at. But your question is even a much, you know, looking at this more holistically in terms of what's good for society. And we know those outcomes. We know exactly what you said is true, is that people who graduate with college degrees, better health outcomes. They live longer. They have a better quality of life in general. So there's so many other things that happen as a result of a college education that we need to take into account. And we don't actually, right now, we don't have convenient ways to measure that in the short term, of course. It's more of a long-term effect. And I agree with you completely. We need to be thinking about what happens with our people, you know, into the future.
What do you think is going to happen in Jefferson City this year that people might keep in mind as far as an impact on the MU for the coming year?
You know, one of the things that we're seeing is, of course, we're very happy right now with our relationship with the legislators. We have some great legislators in this area, and we have them throughout the state. We're hearing significant support for higher education, understanding the value of what higher education brings to this state. I think there's an understanding of higher education, not just as something that is for the individual that's getting the degree, but also that it adds to the economic development of the state. And I think those are things that are resonating with the legislators. So we're quite we're quite optimistic.
Moon Choi had a good column that he had printed in most of the newspapers around here, probably statewide, that was talking about that, what you just said, some of the benefits for the Boot Hill. You might not think about benefits coming from the four-campus system. Of course, that's what his concern was. But I think that backs up what you're saying and gave some good examples of that. What's next? I looked through the Task Force on Academic Program Analysis, Enhancement, and Opportunities. I think I saw earlier this week that all staff members are being encouraged to fill out a survey and talk about what they do in their jobs. And they know that that is going to be looked at and scrutinized as far as is there still a need for this job or not. So that's happening now. Yeah. Where do you see this process?
So I'll start with the activity analysis. What we're doing there is really looking at the functions of all of our staff across the entire institution. And it gets a little bit to what Mitch Daniels was talking about, and that is we need to be looking at how do we make ourselves efficient, right? It doesn't, for us, it's about which roles, where should they be? Can we think about a different way of doing those things so that we provide the services, better services for our students? That's really what that activity analysis is about. The academic program review that you mentioned, there are a number of programs on there that the task force looked at, and we need to now be working with our deans and our faculty, the chairs of those departments, to really understand, where are those programs and what are they doing, and then to discuss what's the next steps with each of those programs.
Seems to me like by doing this process, some people will react and say, it never should have gotten to the point where you have academic programs that don't have more than one or two people interested or this or that, or shouldn't have gotten to the point where you have to do a survey for somebody to say, here's what I do. But you know what? I think what you have to overcome, I'm saying this, it seems to me, is that kind of reaction and saying, you know what, folks, maybe you're right, but this is the reality of this, and so now we are doing something about it.
I would actually take it one step further than that, in that my belief actually is that this should be a part of the culture. If you're going to have continuous improvement, you should be doing this annually thinking about what are you doing at every place in the institution. And that's the type of culture we want. We want a culture that's not just going to say, we've been doing it this way and we're going to continue to do it that way. We're going to evolve every year. We're going to do these types of things every year and improve every year. That's how you drive continuous improvement. That's how you become an exceptional institution.
Well, caller, if you're still there, I'm sorry I've ignored you for a while, but I'll let you get on before I have to let the chancellor go. You there?
Thank you, David.
Yep.
I started at the university in 1969 and graduated in a health profession. I retired as a faculty member in the School of Health Professions. And I think the area that you've referred to is, besides teaching and research, the component of the university that is service.
Yes.
And we affect the whole state.
Absolutely.
We affect internationally. And my question in relationship to service is, how can we better approach working in the community with Boone Hospital Center to serve the community and the state and the best of what the university has to offer and the best of what Boone Hospital can offer if we would just work together.
Hmm. Thank you. I'm glad we had a chance for your call. I'm glad she brought up service. And then the other part related to that is Boone Hospital.
Yeah. So I agree completely on the service part. We the things that we do in extension, for example, and how we work with throughout the state, the things that are going on in education, where we work with every school district in this state, have a big impact on everything that we're doing. If you look at extension, for instance, I think the extension budget across the entire state is on the order of $80 million. And that translates. We did an economic impact study, and that translates to $945 million impact on the state. So that's a really big multiplier for what we're doing for this state and helping all the way northeast, southeast, all around the state. And this is something we're committed to doing. It's important to the state. It's important for what we should be doing as an institution, and we want to have that as part of the culture, and it continues to be part of the culture of our institution. Boone County, I think there are opportunities. You know, we had discussions, and we're right now in a holding pattern. We will wait to see where that goes. But I think, again, there are opportunities there collectively where we could be serving this region much better and making sure that the health care for this region is top-notch. And we are committed at Mizzou to make sure that we provide the type of health care that will ensure that people live long and healthy lives.
It's possible that there could be communication and work towards something with the Boone Hospital again?
It's possible.
Hmm. All right. Chancellor, I always appreciate your time. Thank you very much, and thanks for handling the two calls with us today.
Thank you.
Look forward to our next visit. Thank you.
Thank you so much, David. It's always great to be here.
Chancellor Alexander Cartwright, our guest. This is KFRU.